Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Thursday, February 25th, 2010 here. And let me correct a little volume. We had quite a bit of levels change there coming out of the news and commercial break. I want to start off this show before we get going. I owe a bit of an apology to the Goodyear people because yesterday I was having problems with the car. And because it had a relatively new alternator and a new starter, and I was still having starting problems, I was looking at the battery issue, and I bought a new battery. And like three tries later, it died. And because all the other components were new, I was a little bit upset. But on examination, it comes to find out, the starter, which has been in that car only 6 months, had failed. Again, so the Goodyear people were right, and I apologize for the nasty things I said about them yesterday. But the bottom line is, and I took it back to the place where we had the starter put in, and I forget the exact name of it because when I do go to these places, I say, if there is an American manufactured part, you know, let's go with that. And so the guy had gotten us an American starter, aftermarket starter for the car, and it failed. After only 6 months. So that was the cause of the problem. And I don't remember who made the starter. If it crosses my desk, I'll mention it to you. But that's kind of what was happening with that. And the bottom line is, you know, I mean, we can't even make an electric motor that's reliable anymore. And yes, it was under warranty. And the new starter was put in without any charge to me. But see, here's the point I'm getting at. We have allowed ourselves to be swindled into thinking that a warranty is the same thing as reliability. And it isn't. You know, if you're having to go back to the factory or the store or wherever every 2 to 3 months, that's an unreliable product. And the fact that it's under warranty, yeah, it's nice you're not having to pay to replace it. But the business model seems to be make it as cheaply as possible so that when the bad ones come in, you can just throw them in the landfill, give them a new one, and you're still making profits. But as a result, we have a lot of unreliable stuff in our lives. And now that the economy has basically crashed and we can't afford to just constantly buy new whatevers to replace the old whatevers, the fact that this stuff isn't reliable is going to come back to haunt our nation with a vengeance. So I remember when I was a kid, I know it's an old cliche, when I was your age, I used to eat a piece of cement before walking 27 miles to school, all that other stuff. And I know you don't want to hear about it, the younger audience. But the bottom line is, you know, there was a time when the emphasis was on the reliability. And, yeah, there was a guarantee, but the odds were you were never going to use it. Now it's almost become part of the standard process. You know, buy the product, get the warranty, probably buy the extended warranty, you know, or you're really asking for it if you're not. I went through that with Best Buy. And then, sure enough, 2, 3, 4 months down the road, you'll be back there with your extended warranty. Oh, here's another one. Okay, fine. And then 2, 3 months after that, you're back in there. But think about how much time we're grinding up, not to mention gas and wear and tear in the car and everything, constantly driving back and forth to exercise the warranty. And the bottom line is we cannot absolutely 100% rely on the things that we have in our life, whether it's the car or the TV or the camera or whatever. Well, you know, obviously if we're getting stuff from Japan, that's a different story. That stuff tends to last forever. But certainly the, you know, American-made products and the stuff we're getting from China, and I'm not saying that China always makes really bad, cheap stuff because they make the iPhone, which is a very nice piece of hardware, but American importers who are thinking only in terms of profitability and thinking, yee-haw, we have fooled the American people into thinking that a pretty printed piece of paper called a warranty is, you know, just as good as reliability. You know, they're going to order the cheapest thing they can get made. I had this toaster problem, and when the toaster failed, I said, okay, you know, I at least can handle the electrics inside its stern. I went to open it up and discovered the whole thing was put together. There weren't any nuts or bolts or screws. It was like glued and welded and twist-tabbed together. It was never intended to be taken apart and repaired. That's how cheaply the products are. The business model is literally use it till it breaks, throw it in the trash, go back and get another one under warranty. Do you know how much raw materials, not to mention carbon emissions, Al Gore, that we're, you know, putting out there with this constant digging up natural resources, pressing them into an appliance that doesn't last more than 6 months, throw it in the landfill, and repeat the process over and over and over again. You never hear the global warming cultists talk about that. You know, they're always talking about global government and global and carbon taxes and everything, but they never talk about the very wasteful way in which our goods and services and products are manufactured, given to us, expected to wear out in just a few months or a few years, and then thrown in the landfill again. That's really where we should be thinking about, you know, wise use of resources or recycling. That's the biggest waste. Not the carbon dioxide coming out of your barbecue or whatever, but just how much overconsumption is mandated by the fact that what we're buying is basically unreliable, cheap crud. It maximizes the profits for the corporations, and we are left holding junk. Absolutely. All right, so there's my little apology to Goodyear and explanation on that. Our phone lines are open, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Jared is in the control room today answering the phone calls and otherwise keeping us out of trouble. So if you want to join us on the air, go ahead. Now, I want to start off here. There was a story going around earlier today, cryptome.org, which is a very popular website that very often finds and leaks embarrassing information for corporations, was taken down under the command, the dictate, the order of the Microsoft Corporation for finding and posting a document regarding Microsoft's exact policies for giving law enforcement authorities your information from using their mail services and basically any of their online services. As you know, the big trend right now is the cloud, the idea that you no longer keep your own data on your own local machine, that the home computers are, we're almost going backwards. We're going back to the days of a single terminal that sits on your desk, and there's a mainframe out there someplace in the corporate sphere that has all of your data and records, and they say, we'll make sure it's always backed up and we're never going to lose your data, and that's very comforting and relaxing for a lot of people. But the problem is, it means that everything in your life is on somebody else's machine. And this document was basically saying under what circumstances Microsoft would tell law enforcement, yeah, come on in, look through his books, look through his financial records, anything that's on their cloud applications was basically open. So Microsoft didn't like that, and they put out this takedown order regarding this. And briefly, cryptome.org was off the net. But apparently, under the glare of the public spotlight in the blogosphere, Microsoft retracted its demands, and cryptome.org is back up and running. It's still propagating through DNS, so some of the more outlying regions still may not be able to reach it. But I can reach it from here in Hawaii, and so it should be back up and running very, very soon. So that's a victory for the blogosphere. It's a victory for free speech. It's a victory for whistleblowers. It's a victory for everybody who says that we should not have corporate secrecy and about how our data is being handled and who it's being given to. They all want privacy. I mean, there was this story about where these police officers were accused of raping this woman, and the courts are saying we're going to keep their names secret, and they're going back and forth about it. But on the other hand, everything in your life, you know, as the little people, everything in your life is open to review. Even going through the airport, you got to, like, stand there and get naked for them to look at you to get on the airplane. You know, the privacy has become a right that's reserved to the rich and powerful in the government. And for everybody else, you have no expectation of privacy, especially if you have your data out there on the cloud. There are advantages to the cloud system, but I like to have my data on my computers and my backup systems, and that's just kind of the way it is here. All righty, we're coming down to the end of the first segment, and when we come back into this next hour, I want to get onto this situation about the escalating war situation. Now, for some reason, the last couple of days, the corporate media propaganda flood about Iran is this and Iran is that seems to have abated. I would not view that necessarily as a positive sign, because of some other developments, and we're going to be talking about that. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933, and we will be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Obviously, uppermost in most people's minds is this continuing push for war, and more war, and more war, and more war. And I think the reason for that is really very simple. During war, the attention of the people is very much on the enemy. During peace, the attention of the people is on the government. And right now, the U.S. government does not withstand a close scrutiny. And it seems like every time our government has gotten itself into a horrendous mess of some kind, the first thing they do is go out and start, you know, killing a bunch of people. So, let's see. There we are. Much better. Okay, so anyway, pardon me for just a minute. I have to adjust a volume level on testing. Okay, there we are. So our government is out there, and you'd think we have, you know, this Nobel Peace Prize winning President Obama would leap at the opportunity to save lives, save money, ensure a lot of peace by accepting the latest Iranian offer for a fuel swap. Now, instead, Obama has basically sent Robert Gibbs to reject the whole deal and say, you know, we don't think that's going to happen. And this, unfortunately, is a habit that the U.S. has picked up from its close association with Israel, because the way Israel will set the stage for a war is they'll pretend that they want peace. In fact, one of the most nauseating things I have seen today is this new PR campaign, you know, size doesn't matter. You know, it's this new tourism and image polishing program that Israel's trying to put together. And you go into the actual website, and one of the first banners you see is Israel, a small nation, a large appetite for peace. And at that point, I had this really strong urge to uninstall my browser completely from the computer. Because anybody looking back at the photos of Operation Cast Lead in Palestine a year ago, or the Lebanon War before that, or the attacks on, you know, pick a long... No, Israel does not want peace. They wouldn't spend so much on war if they wanted peace, just like the United States. They are a war-mongering nation, period, end of discussion. So, you know, they're getting out there. So we're back to the situation with Iran, and Iran has basically said this offer, okay, if you're worried about the enrichment, we'll give you the raw uranium, you enrich it to fuel rods and give it back to us. Iran is under no obligation to accommodate Israel's paranoia in this regard. Iran has signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So has the United States, I might add. And under the terms of that treaty, which the U.S. recognizes by virtue of that signature, Iran has a right to build power stations. Iran has a right to make medical isotopes. They have the right to make the fuel rods for the power stations. They are in the legal right here. It is the United States that is in violation of treaty by demanding that Iran sacrifice its legal rights under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Also, under Article 4, the U.S. is supposed to be in there helping them build the power station, which, if the concern really was a clandestine weapons laboratory, that's the best way to make sure it doesn't happen. Go in there and, you know, help put in the foundations and the wiring and the plumbing, and then you're going to know it doesn't have a secret underground nuclear weapons factory like Dimona does. So what the U.S. is doing, and this is a tactic they picked up from Israel, is they go in and they say, well, let's see if we can find a peaceful solution. And Iran says, okay, well, let's do this. And the United States says, no, that won't work. We demand this. And Iran says, well, we can't go with that. And the U.S. says, all right, there we are. We have it. We tried to reach a peaceful solution. The bombers are going on in. The sticking point here is that the United States and Israel are basically demanding that Iran send out all of its uranium for reprocessing at the same time and then sit there and twiddle their thumbs until whoever's doing the actual processing deigns to send it back as the medical isotopes or the fuel rods. Now, Iran is not going to do that, and for two very good reasons. One, the last time they did that deal, they got screwed. They sent a whole bunch of their uranium to France for reprocessing, and France said, nope, change our mind, We don't think you should have it. So right now, Iran is understandably cautious about letting large amounts of their very expensive inventory of uranium out of the country. They know from past experience dealing with the West, they might not get it back. Secondarily, and more practical, as long as there are radioactive materials at their facilities, their enrichment facilities, the fuel rod fabrication plants, the medical isotope factory, the power station, as long as there are fuels on the on the premises, nobody's going to bomb them. Well, let me take that back. Israel might still go ahead and bomb them, but there's a reason not to, and that's called a huge radioactive cloud, and the winds would simply spread it all over the place. And yes, Israel is a fair distance away over on the far side of Iraq, but they've already got enough radioactivity problems with the leakage from Dimona. And a huge radioactive release all over the Middle East is not going to occur without political consequences. You're going to have every nation, not just Iran, who are going to be very angry about this, but you're going to have every nation around Iran, including Iraq, saying, what are you guys doing? We're being showered with radioactive debris. And so Iran knows as long as there are radioactive materials in those buildings, it is a deterrent, possibly not a guaranteed one, against being attacked. The instant all of the uranium is out of those facilities, it's an engraved invitation. Come on and bomb us, guys. So that's what's going on there. Now, the situation is that Russia is, I think, finally getting out of their Neville Chamberlain phase. Because they're basically saying, once again, they're saying, you know, they're not going to support any more economic sanctions on Iran. They're basically, as anything going through the United Nations, Russia is going to veto. They're basically saying the U.S. is invading country after country after country after country. And so far, Russia and China and the rest of the world have been making the same critical mistake with the United States that Neville Chamberlain made with Nazi Germany. Oh, let them have this little piece of out of the way. Let them have the Sudetenland. Let them have Poland. Who cares? You know, if we let them have that land, we will have peace in our time. Well, that didn't work out very well. But it's amazing how many countries have gone along with this appeasement path with the United States of America. And here we are with five countries we've invaded overtly or covertly, aiming at a sixth. I think the rest of the world is waking up to the fact that the U.S. is not going to stop grabbing other people's land until the other people stand up and make them stop, which is a very, very dangerous situation here. Now, over in Iran, they have 16% of the world's proven gas reserves. That's a big chunk. 11% of the world's oil reserves. They're looking to develop them. Russia is starting to step in. They're getting involved in developing. Russia and Iran are major trading partners. Russia is not going to sit still while their trading partner gets pounded on. And this is why this whole situation about going to Iran is so dangerous. Now, Israel doesn't care if the U.S. and Russia get into a nuclear war with each other. Israel stand off to one side, let us kill each other, and say, okay, well, now they're gone. We've got a nuclear arsenal, which you already knew all about, and we're in charge of the Mideast oil and the rest of you from now on. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. 866-582-9933.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the escalating tensions with Iran and the escalating tensions just all around. Well, basically anybody who's near Israel is getting tense right now. Interesting story. Iran has caught what they are calling an American-backed terrorist. Apparently, they have grabbed one of the major leaders of this organization called Jundala, which sounds like a character out of George Lucas Star Wars movie. You know, the Jundala over there with the big thing. Anyway, I digress. It is a militant Muslim organization based in the Balochistan region in Pakistan. And apparently, quite a few people, Iran included, are saying it is a front for the Central Intelligence Agency in order to go out, commit terror acts to be blamed on the Muslims, And, of course, within Iran, they are part of the group that is attempted last summer and is attempting now, to overthrow the elected government of Iran and impose yet another in a long and glorious line of indistinguished American puppets. And so they've caught this guy. I am still waiting to find out if some of those, I think it was something like 50 military officers just arrested in Turkey for a planned coup against that government. I'm waiting for them to come out and say who they were really working for, because Turkey had begun to sort of stretch its limits, and they weren't always going along with everything that Israel wanted. So maybe somebody wanted to overthrow them. All right, getting back to Iraq, there's a story that came out over the last couple of days. This is getting more interesting. Apparently a bunch of the Blackwater Guards, or they call themselves Z now, the guys who think they're on a brand new holy crusade. I mean, the founder of Blackwater, I mean, literally is telling people, God told him, go out and kill the Arab Muslims. Anyway, apparently these guards stole a whole bunch of military weapons in Kabul and just basically went on a shooting spree. And killed a couple of Afghan civilians and injured at least two more. The guards included a former U.S. Marine with a criminal record of assault and battery, and a former soldier charged from the U.S. Army after testing positive for cocaine. Okay, this is up in Afghanistan. There was another story just a couple of days ago where a whole bunch of weapons had gone missing in Iraq that were thought to also be the Blackwater people. Like, they're not getting enough money and toys to play with already at taxpayer expense. Meanwhile, NATO is admitting the deaths of eight boys were a mistake. There was a nighttime raid eastern Afghanistan where eight schoolboys from one family, the same family, they have large families, doesn't make it any better, eight boys from the one family were killed. And NATO is saying, we're sorry, we had bad intelligence. No kidding. Military intelligence is an oxymoron to begin with. And they're saying, you know, it was a terrible thing, but it shouldn't have happened. Yeah, we know it shouldn't have happened. NATO is killing more civilians than they are the Taliban. This thing is a Charlie Foxtrot. But remember, they only hate us for our freedoms. They only hate us for our freedoms. All right. Getting back to this situation between Russia and NATO, Russia is basically saying they're responding to what they perceive as NATO expansion at their front doorstep. And they're saying, you know, at some point, you know, this new deployment of a missile defense system in Europe, they're taking us back to the Cold War. Remember Eisenhower's military-industrial complex. The USSR collapsed. We were all friends with the Russian Republic. And then all of a sudden, by virtue of a couple of what may have been stolen elections, and all of a sudden we're glaring at the Russians again. And we can just hear the cash registers ringing in the Pentagon. Yee-haw! We got the Cold War back. We're going to tax those American people right to their knees, and we're going to put the money in our pocket, and we're going to build all these new fancy weapon systems that don't actually have to do anything. And we're going to have lots of bombs to play with and everything. Because, I mean, let's face it. You know, the bottom line is that those military officers, those generals and admirals and all the rest of them with all those ribbons and brass and buttons all over their coat, if they didn't have nuclear weapons behind them to scare you, they look pretty ridiculous. They look like a marching band that lost its instruments, frankly. But as long as they got those bombs and rockets behind them, oh, yes, he's a military officer. We have to act like we're impressed. You know, even though they're mistakenly killing all these school kids over there in Afghanistan. So Russia's getting a little nervous, and, you know, we're getting back to the same cycle of, you know, we build a new weapon and we aim it at the Russians, and that forces the Russians to build a new weapon and aim it back at us. And meanwhile, the American people and the Russian people are being taxed into poverty, and we're not able to take care of our kids. Remember what John F. Kennedy was saying about the commonality between the Americans and the Russians. We all love our children. We want them to have a good future and not wind up as bullet catchers in some concocted war to make the banks richer and satisfy some delusional religious fanatic's idea of a holy war. Now, speaking of delusional religious fanatics, apparently Ehud Barak is here in Washington, D.C. He didn't get what he wanted from Mike Mullen. He didn't get what he wanted from the Russians. So now he's in Washington, D.C., apparently laying down the law. And the official White House spokeslug was saying that they're basically resuming a strategic dialogue on Iran, which is White House speak for Barak is standing in the Oval Office, jumping up and down and saying, you get this thing going or you can kiss your reelection goodbye. And I'll tell everybody who really did 9/11 and just go out there and do it, or we're going to release the negatives and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Now, I understand that Barack Obama has been sort of resistant to the idea of a new war because he understands. He looks at the poll numbers. Another war is an election loser this November. You know, Israel doesn't care about that. Israel gives orders and you do what you're told or bad things will happen to you. That's the way they've been operating here. Now, speaking of bad things happening, this situation in Dubai is really blowing up. And I think this is a very good thing. Okay? Because of all the cameras that were in Dubai and some recklessness on the part of the Mossad, a dozen of their agents have been identified in the police tapes of this assassination. You know, let's forget the word assassination. This is a murder. These guys flew into somebody else's country and murdered somebody. Period. End of discussion. Assassination is a word that's supposed to make it sound like somehow it's justified. No, it isn't. They flew into another guy's country. They snuck up behind him. They murdered him. They murdered this guy. And apparently now, almost 30 of the Mossad's operatives, and that's a huge number, have had their covers blown. Their pictures are all over the world. People are looking for them. They're probably back home in Israel, or they're buried out by, you know, the Negev desert as an embarrassment. But the bottom line is it's a huge, huge scandal. It's not going away. And it reminds me very much of the Levon affair back in the 1950s. And if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, just a real quick recap. Actually, I'm going to save the recap to the next segment because we've got somebody waiting on the line. We're going to go to Rob in Minnesota. Aloha, Rob. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I kind of wanted to talk about something that's a little bit different from what you're talking about.
Okay.
So, I guess it has something to do with inventors. Now, this has kind of been on my mind for a while. And have you ever heard of the project Bikes Against Bush?
No, I haven't.
Okay, it was during the 2004 Republican convention. This kid who was an engineering student hooked up his bicycle with a laptop and a cell phone, and you could text message at, you know, his bike at you know, at the Bikes Against Bush website. And he had the bicycle set up with all these chalk sprayer cans and basically turned his bike into a dot matrix printer.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I've seen that with the skytypers and stuff like that. You know, I have to say I'm very cautious about things like that, simply because, again, with all the TV cameras we have in our society, anybody who goes out to do these kind of activities, it's too easy for them to be identified. And so I'm all for protesting. And I agree we should be breaking free of the free speech zones. But at the same time, exercise caution. Doesn't do anybody good to get you locked up. We'll be right back.
No, if they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Now, as I was talking about last segment, this situation in Dubai where the Mossad agents have basically been caught doing what they normally do, going around the world murdering people, it may turn out to be a new scandal for Israel, much like the Levon affair. What's the Levon affair? Okay, back in the 1950s, there was a crisis in Egypt. You know how everyone always says that Israel's our only friend in the Middle East? Well, that's one of the reasons is because Israel kind of goes out of its way to try and make everybody else our enemy. And one of the ways they did that in Egypt back in the 1950s, there were these Israeli agents were going around blowing up British and American assets, buildings, people, whatever, and they were planting evidence to put the blame on the Egyptians in order to destroy diplomatic relations between Egypt and the U.S. and Great Britain. And it was working. And it was working. Then one of the bombs went off prematurely, and the Egyptian authorities caught one of the bombers, and it turned out to be the Israeli agent. And Israel, of course, said, oh, it's all an anti-Semitic plot. You know, the Jew haters of the world, they've set this up, blah, blah, blah. And eventually, through a long, laborious process, turned out that, yes, this had been an operation by Israel's Mossad, and it was eventually blamed on Pinchon Lavon, who I think was Israel's Minister of the Interior at the time, although it looks to me like he got framed by the real perpetrators, which included Shimon Peres and a bunch of those other, the Irgun gang, those people. So anyway, the bottom line is, by way of deception, thou shalt do war. And it looks like, you know, and it blew up to be this huge, huge, huge scandal. And it looks like this one might just be the same thing. Now, interestingly, we're beginning to see more and more of these articles about all these countries that have been warning Israel. Please don't fake our passports. If you run around the world murdering people using fake Australian passports, people are going to stop liking Australians. Canada said the same thing a while back. So did New Zealand. You know, if you want to go around the world murdering somebody, copy the passports of a country that people already don't like the United States. All right, we're going to go to the phones here. We have got Glenn in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Glenn. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Mike, now that we got our colons cleaned and our mojo up, let's talk about South Dakota. I heard that there was a law passed through the legislature that had a slight mistake in it. Instead of returning a couple of hundred acres to the control of the Indians, they turned the whole state over to the control of the Indians. Is there anything to that story? Have you heard anything on that?
I have heard absolutely nothing about that, and it sounds like one of those wishful thinking things. But they're just going to say, look, it was a mistake. You know, we go back, it was a typo error. You know, I mean, nobody ever holds typographic errors to the letter of the law. They go back and say, yeah, it was a typo. You know, the proofreader missed it, and that's the bottom line. So I don't think there's an issue there. Thank you for the call. We're going to let you go here and get back onto some other issues. Interesting little story. There was a little puff piece. As we said before, Israel is embarking on this campaign to really polish and rebrand their image around the world. You know, they've got this website up there. They're trying to boost tourism by showing all the hot, sexy babes that you're going to meet if you come to Israel and, you know, what a wonderful place it is. And there was this article about how, you know, never mind that the real estate market is crashing in Europe and in the Americas and everything. Business is booming in Israel. Real estate, they've got beautiful houses and people are able to pay cash for them. And it's a wonderful thing and so forth and so on. But I think this is going to backfire on them. And the reason is very simple, because people here in the West and the United States understand that the reason Israel is so prosperous is because they are sucking money away from the rest of the world through this Holocaust guilt trip or blackmail. Or certainly in the United States of America, we've got AIPAC that has a very simple rule of operation. They will give millions of dollars to congressional candidates in exchange for those candidates voting your tax money into Israel's pockets. And the American taxpayer has been forced to give Israel four times the entire cost of the Apollo moon program. And we still don't have a giant leap for mankind to show for it. And the United States is not the only country being looted by Israel. They're still looting Germany, even though 99% of the Germans alive today had nothing to do with the Nazis. And, it's, you know, it's all over the world that this is going on here. And so they've got all this money flooding in from all over the place. Of course they can be prosperous. They're half the size of New Jersey. If you took four times the entire cost of the Apollo moon program and you put it into the population in a space the size of, you know, half the size of New Jersey, of course they're going to be doing well. The money is coming in. It's not going out. It's not getting sucked out to give to some other nation on the other side of the world. Of course they're going to be doing good. The U.S. and Europe are still sending billions of dollars in cash to Israel. Now, here's what's really kind of interesting. Because at the same time, we're getting this other article where Israel is going to agree to increase their foreign aid to South America in exchange for South America's support for Israel against Iran or whatever else, that, or, you know, Holocaust denial laws or whatever else. So if Israel has got enough money to be sending money to South America, why are we, the American people, still sending billions of dollars to Israel? It doesn't make sense, especially because, and follow my logic here, you have been forced, against your will, to send a whole bunch of your money to Israel, which then turns around and gives it to South America, which only a few days ago formed their new regional alliance, specifically excluding the United States, basically telling us to go jump in the Atlantic. Does that make any sense, that your money is winding up in South America at the same time South America is telling the U.S. to basically go get lost? That's how weird the world is getting. Remember when Jonathan Pollard was looting the nuclear secrets that your taxes had paid for, billions and billions of dollars, trillions actually, developing our nuclear deterrent? Jonathan Pollard takes the key information the Russians need to know to defeat the American nuclear deterrent, gives it to Israel, our friend in the Middle East. Israel turns around and traded it to our enemy, the Soviet Union, in exchange for increased immigration quotas. That's our friend in the Middle East here. So we see this article, business booming for Israeli real estate agents. Business is booming in Israel because all the money is being given to them. It's being drawn out of every other country and given to them. Between AIPAC and blackmail and all the guilt tripping over the Holocaust, and you toss in, you know, a couple of dozen Bernie Madoffs, you know, and you begin to get the idea. Of course they're prosperous. And it's not because they deserve it or worked for it. They're scamming the rest of the world on all of this stuff. It's just amazing. Now, back here in the United States. Oh, wait a minute. Another caller on the phone here. We're going to go to Dennis in Florida. Aloha, Dennis. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Michael. As usual, many things, many things. There's about 100 I would like to talk to you directly about, but I don't think the show's that long.
Yeah. Well, we've only got another – actually, we've only got another 3 minutes, and then we got one more hour today.
I guess. I'm glad you're on for 2 hours, It's been a blessing for me. I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you. If we could actually find sponsors, we'd be on for three.
Well, yeah, but those are hard to come by, I'm sure. No one's got any money. We know
well, the bomb makers have the money. The people making stuff that kill people, they got lots of money to play with.
And we go.
Anyway, what's on your mind? We're almost to the end of the hour. What's on your mind?
I got this stupid idea about passive-aggressive resistance, passive by just not going along, and aggressive by educating ourselves and others, you know, simple stuff like that.
Well, you know, that's kind of the idea behind the national strike that we're planning for April 15th through the 18th, which is basically peaceful, non-confrontational, non-cooperation. It worked for Mahatma Gandhi, and we're going to give it a try here.
Gandhi won. He won in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it's a clever way to do it, but it, you know, obviously it takes the numbers. That's the only advantage we have is the numbers, but we don't have the education yet.
Well, it takes numbers and it takes media exposure, which was the advantage Gandhi had, that he had some very sympathetic reporters who were writing the story and getting what he was doing out to the rest of the world to bring the world's condemnation down on Great Britain. Now, up until recently, the corporate media has come under governmental control, but now we're breaking free of that. That's why this show exists. That's why the website exists. There, you know, we are able now to report on these strikes and protests and get it out there and have a huge percentage of the American people of the world understand that. Thank you for the call. We got to take a break for commercials and news. We're going to be back in about 7 minutes, so stay tuned and aloha, America.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
I think 29933. All right, let's see. We have got no audio from me. No audio from me? Okay, hang on a second. It's going out on the access. Oh, okay. Things are all well and good now. Yes. All right. There we are. Okay. Where were we? I was so distracted there. Actually, before I get back to the news here, I was in the chat room talking to people, and we're talking. We spend a lot of time chatting about preparations for what appear to be some very, very difficult times ahead. And we were talking about, you know, guns and silver and seeds and all the rest of that. I was talking about crossbows because when I was in college, I was on my college archery team. I took my varsity letter in arrow. So we've actually been looking possibly at, you know, one of those nice military-style crossbows just to go out and bag a wild pig if we need to eat something and, you know, basically deal with other vermin and pests that show up on our doorstep. But just at that same moment, I was going around the dial on the TV, and, you know, the Olympics are on, and people are watching, and there's the curling competition. And the commentator is up there talking. He's describing this one curler who's just pushing the thing as the Tiger Woods of curling. And at some point, and I guess if you're just coming into it cold, it just the absurdity of the statement is just there. Now, I don't want to diss or insult anybody for their athletic activity. But the original purpose of the Olympics in ancient times was to focus on those skills that actually had a utilitarian purpose. The hammer was a weapon. So was the discus. So was the javelin. Running and jumping were all part of the training that soldiers with spears and swords and shields had to go through. Now, skiing and these various other tracks, you know, hurdling, getting over the barricades of a fort, pole vaulting, same thing, getting over the walls of a fort. It's all militarily related. The winter sports, skiing. Remember, during World War II, we had military units, army units on skis crossing the country. And, you know, triathlon, you know, skiing, shooting, and all the rest of that stuff. It's all militarily related. Some of the newer sports seem to be getting away from that. I don't know what curling is supposed to be about. But for them to go out there and start saying, yes, this is the Tiger Woods of curling, it seems sometimes it reaches a little bit of absurdity in the descriptions. And like I said, I'm not insulting anybody having fun doing what they're doing, but the attempt by the corporate media to somehow generate an excitement there sometimes gets a little absurd. I guess it's true also of golf. I mean, I don't understand who watches golf. It's boring, you know, and I'm sorry. And I've played golf. I don't even want to watch me play golf. That's how boring it is. All right, getting back to the more serious stuff here. As you heard on the news break, there's a debate in Congress about, you know, the health care reform. And basically the debate is, you know, how much and who we're going to gouge for more money here. Harkin is basically out there admitting that the public option is dead. There's going to be no public, nonprofit insurance option available for the American people. Why? Well, very simple, because the insurance companies, the for-profit insurance companies, were very generous with the campaign contributions last election and will be again going into November. So what Barack Obama is going to do, he is going to guarantee that every American has health insurance coverage by ordering all Americans to go out and buy health insurance coverage from the for-profit health insurance companies that were so generous with their campaign contributions. And going into November, I can guarantee you're going to have the president stand up there and say, our party made sure that all Americans had health insurance. And they're going to say it like it's a really good thing and like the government is responsible when the government is simply coercing us and telling us where to spend what little money we have left. And if you're being forced to spend your money on something, it's another form of taxation. And my argument with all of this is that when we voted for a president for hope and change and health care reform, what we wanted was what they have in other countries like France or Norway or Canada, where, yes, you're paying very high taxes, but the government takes that tax money and it takes care of you, provides health care, provides higher education, keeps the roads repaired, keeps the bridges inspected, keeps the flood control intact, keeps the dry brush under control so the place isn't burning up. That is mature, responsible government. In the United States, they're taking the same amount of money and it goes to war and bombs and Israel and corruption and Wall Street. And we, the American people, after paying this huge chunk of money for taxes, we are then expected to pay for our own health care and our own higher education, very often going so deeply into debt that the supposed benefits of a college degree on your paycheck may not actually materialize for 20, 30 years while you pay off all those student loans. And this health care reform they're talking about now is more of exactly the same. They're still going to take high taxes from us, and they're going to spend it on war and Wall Street and Israel, and the roads are still crumbling, and you're still having to pay for your own health care and your own health care insurance and your own higher education. We've got large pieces of the country burning down because the dead brush is not being cleared, massive floods because the control isn't being taken care of. And all our government can think of doing is convincing you that the Earth's destruction is all your fault so they can charge you another tax for it. And it's almost kind of ironic to see Obama out there talking about taking care of planet Earth in the context of the supposed human-caused global warming, and yet at the same time, he's completely neglecting our country. I mean, that is, to me, one of the most fundamental hypocrisies of the Obama administration, that they'll get out there and they'll talk about wanting to preserve the Earth for future generations. At the same time, they're not willing to take care of the country we have here and now. And I think that's a major, major disconnect. And everybody ought to be looking at that going into November. Now, why is the healthcare reform really such a total circus? Why is it totally concerned with money and the whole healthcare bill? If you read through it all, it's all about money. There's not actually anything about health care in the health care reform. It's all about money, where it comes from, who gets it, who divvies it up. There's nothing in there about actually improving the quality of care. There's nothing in there about saying maybe we ought not to let people be eating monosodium glutamate or aspartame or synthetic bovine growth hormone or any of the other zillions of chemicals that are put into our food, which really have not been adequately tested. And by the way, Monsanto's in trouble again for fudging some of their reports about the possible adverse effects of their genetically modified crops. I mean, that's how completely out of control it is. Our Congress is out there bashing Toyota over a gas pedal, and yet Monsanto is playing, you know, reckless with genetics, the most dangerous technology on Earth, and going, yee-haw, ride 'em cowboy, with their crops around the world, and they're causing all kinds of damage, which could very easily run out of control. But no, we're going to go bash on Toyota today, because they're Japanese, they're foreign, they're a threat to American industry. Actually, American industry destroyed itself. They didn't need Toyota's help. But the reason for the health care reform is so corrupt, and it's all about money, and it's all about gouging you for more money for less care, is a very simple thing. There are 8 healthcare lobbyists in Washington, D.C. for every single member of Congress. 8. And I'm willing to wager that at least a couple of them are a really hot babe for the male members of Congress. Maybe I'm being presumptive. There's going to be a lot of hot young bodies among those lobbyists because that's the way it works. And that's the reason why Congress isn't paying attention to you anymore. As long as they've got the vote fraud, as long as they've got those electronic voting machines, Congress will continue to listen to whoever's got the money, you know, whoever's got the hot body, and, of course, anybody from Israel. So that's what this debate is all about, is just finding another way to take more money from you. All right, we're going to take another break here for commercials. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a scandal that is reemerging because of a rather reckless comment that Bernanke made before the Congress in the last couple of days. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And let's see, just Looking at the chat room. Ah, there we are. Okay, lots of stuff happening here. Now, we're talking about this situation where Ben Bernanke, Helicopter Ben, was before Congress, and he was asked about this situation that was earlier reported on where literally pallets of $100 bills were flown to Iraq in order to prop up the new government the United States was putting in there. And it's something, you know, like $12 billion in cash, mostly $100 bills. And basically we're talking about 281 million individual bills, currency, shrink-wrapped onto these wooden pallets, loaded into these C-130 cargo planes, and flown to Baghdad. And from there, it simply vanished. No accountability, no transparency. Nobody knows where it went, if it was being used to bribe people to go along with the new government, or if it was being used to pay for waterboarding or scalpels or whatever. Nobody really knows. So Ron Paul, yay Ron, was grilling Ben Bernanke and basically asked him, where did this money come from? Because it was not appropriated by Congress, and only Congress is allowed to appropriate these kind of expenditures. It wasn't budgeted. It wasn't authorized by Congress. Where did the money come from? And Ben Bernanke sits there and says, this allegation is absolutely bizarre, which is a non-denial denial. And he says, I have no knowledge of anything remotely like what you just described, which, again, is not necessarily denial. He's just saying, I'm stupid, so, I don't know. But Henry Waxman, back in 2009, detailed the whole situation out. In a 13-month period, from May 2003 to June 2004, the Federal Reserve sent $12 billion in cash from the United States to Iraq. I don't know about you. I could use a piece of that $12 billion back right now. Apparently, most of this came out of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, from which the bills came to be packed onto these pallets to go to Iraq. I mean, we're talking about 363 tons of money. I can't even visualize that much cash. I mean, the very first Lethal Weapon movie, at the very end, there's a cargo shipping container filled with a car and a bunch of illegally laundered drug money. And that was like this almost unbelievable amount of cash. If you were to go to an ordinary bank and you were to get permission to see how much real currency cash they have on hand, you would be disappointed. You probably have an illusion that you go inside the vault and there's just piles of money everywhere. It isn't so. Most of the on-hand cash of a bank fits on a shelf. There really isn't that much there. Here we're talking about 281 million bills, 363 tons of cash, and nobody knows where it came from, and nobody knows where it went. Now, I am reading this story. Do you remember about 2 years ago, there was this story going around about these new, incredibly accurate counterfeit notes called the super notes? And they were threatening to destabilize the American economy because they were appearing in such volume that it was triggering inflationary pressure on the dollar. And it was destabilizing the dollar, and it was this big threat. And they were trying to blame it on China at the time. I'm wondering if maybe this $12 billion in U.S. currency was simply printed up, unauthorized, unapproved by Congress, and sent over to Iraq to sort of grease the skids for the American, takeover of the government. And it's unofficial money. It comes from the U.S. Treasury. It's printed up by the same paper, same ink, same plates. But it's sort of being, that's not official money anymore. It's like, the Federal Reserve is already a legalized counterfeiting operation. They just print up the money that they want according, to a set of arbitrary rules which favors the bank and works against the American people. So is it that much of a stretch to think that maybe the Federal Reserve simply told the Treasury Department, go ahead and crank up the presses. We need a bunch of money to go over to Iraq to help, conquer them, to bribe the locals. And, of course, the money just doesn't vanish. It just doesn't go away. It goes into the pockets of people at Blackwater, Kellogg, Brown Root, all those other people, and it recirculates back around the global economy, back to the United States. So sooner or later, that money does come back into our economy, and it does lead to inflationary pressures. And $12 billion is a lot of money to dump onto the U.S. economy. It's going to be felt. We have a caller on the line, Peter in Los Angeles. Aloha, Peter. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Henry Waxman is my congressman.
Yes.
I was with KBR in Iraq.
Okay.
I was at the airport, Baghdad International Airport, for a year as the head of HR for that. And they don't know for sure if it was 12. It might have been as much as $20
billion. Oh, really? Okay.
And I followed these hearings very, very closely because, you know, let me tell you what the accountability was like there. I was issued a government cell phone as a contractor.
Yes.
If I lost my cell phone, I was subject to immediate termination and criminal charges. That's losing a cell phone. And by the way, now we have at least, you know, $12 billion, whatever that was. It's probably closer to 20. But also, the U.S. Army, the military, lost 200,000 small arms that are completely unaccounted for. They bought a bunch of AKs and AKMs from Romania and Yugoslavia and blah, blah, blah to supply the Iraqis. It's completely disappeared. 200,000, that's enough to supply a field army.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wonder how many of those guns are now shooting back at our kids.
Oh, you know, I'm sure there's tons of them. But that's the kind of corruption that went on over there, and I followed that the Waxman hearings, both because I was with KBR, you know, by that time I was no longer with KBR, I was come back in the United States, but and he's my congressman, and I just had seen so much corruption, I wanted to follow up on this. Nothing happened. It fell between the cracks between what's his name, the head of Bremer,
yes,
and Petraeus and whoever else. There was no firm, this is the reason they said for no accountability, there was no firm chain of command or accountability for it, so it just dropped, and it's a missing 20, 12, whatever you want to call it, $1 billion in over 300 pallets. And at that time, which was July of 2003, you couldn't go anywhere without getting shot at. So I guarantee you that would have had to have had military escort. I mean, just to move that's more than a semi-truck full of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that would have meant, you know, travel orders, convoying, MP support or infantry support or something to get anywhere, to move that kind of thing. I guarantee you, they were on those cell phones, believe me, they'd have been on $12 billion worth of cash. So,
well, I got to tell you, I mean, that kind of thing is scary. We still have the situation where on the day before 9/11, you know, Rumsfeld got up at the Pentagon and said, we've misplaced $2.3 trillion. We have no idea where it went. We've got an accounting office looking at it. And, of course, the next day, one of the planes hit the accounting office. That was the end of that story. Peter, thanks. We'll be right back.
RFID chips are becoming more and more common. Right now, there are hundreds of millions of new credit cards and passports that contain these tiny radios. How can you keep them from transmitting your information? Turn them off with ID Stronghold. Secure wallets and secure sleeves from ID Stronghold will block these radio signals. Visit IDStronghold.com or call 800-610-2770. That's 800-610-2770. IDStronghold.com. Protect your information.
Wondering about your retirement portfolio? Is your financial advisor experienced enough to combat rising interest rates, taxes, inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of the International Forecaster. With 45 years of experience and concise investment recommendations, who needs sugar-coated excuses? Get the cold, hard facts and a proven investment strategy. For a free introductory copy to the International Forecaster, call 877-479-8178 or go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just track yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And hello, America, welcome back to the show here. A lot of stuff going on. And during the break, some people are sending me in some stories. Another flashback. This is from 2007. Is the CIA counterfeiting dollars and blaming it on North Korea? And basically, at this time, these again, this is the super notes. Whole bunch of unexplained money was showing up around the world. It looked absolutely perfect. It was deemed the super notes. And the Chinese were being blamed, and this article was North Korea. But according to the Frankfurter Allgemeine, a respected German newspaper, their investigation showed that it seemed to be coming from the Central Intelligence Agency in order for the CIA to basically spend beyond its means, which is a longstanding U.S. government tradition, and at the same time to blame the U.S. strategic enemies for the sudden influx of unexplained currency that was destroying confidence in the American dollar, really what it comes down to. Now, another story, and this one's just coming in out of the Los Angeles Times. And the headline, and this one ought to make you angry. It really should. And if it doesn't, there's something wrong with you. The headline in the Los Angeles Times, this is not a fringe newspaper. This is a major city daily newspaper. GOP Senate race grows heated over Israel. And the tagline is, Fiorina and DeVore question Campbell's level of commitment to the U.S. ally. And my response is, Fiorina and DeVore and Campbell ought to all three be booted out of the race. We are not supposed to decide American elections based on how hard our politicians can suck up to Israel. That is not a controlling deciding factor. We have problems here at home. We have an economy that is in the Al-Qaeda. We have manufacturing that has all but evaporated. We're embroiled in five wars, covert and overt, started with lies and deception, and they're trying to start a sixth one. Israel is going to have to take care of itself. America needs leaders who put America first, second, and third. We have had decades of a Congress and a president who win their offices based on how hard they could daven to Tel Aviv. Enough is enough. Look at the nation around you. Look at the decline. Look at the rot. Look at the corruption coming from a government whose number one priority is, and their number one campaign slogan is, I'm a better friend of Israel than you are. If they love Israel that much, please renounce your American citizenship and move there. Run for the Knesset if you love Israel that much. Our nation hovers at the edge of collapse, and we need leaders who are going to deal with that reality and not run their campaigns on how hard they can wave the flag of Israel. Enough is enough already. This is an obscenity against the American people. This shouldn't even be in the Los Angeles Times. It shouldn't even be an election year issue, how hard or how much we love a foreign government. Can you imagine the incredible media outrage if instead of Israel, they were arguing over the level of commitment they had to Iran at the moment, South Africa, Japan, China, Korea, Russia, any other country on earth? If our politicians were screaming who was a better friend to these foreign governments, Americans would be scratching their heads and saying, what is wrong with these people? They're not running for office in Russia or China or Australia or South Africa or Zimbabwe. They're supposed to be running for office in the United States of America, and they're supposed to be a representative government. They are supposed to represent the American people. They're not supposed to be representing the government of Israel on Capitol Hill. Now, we're going into a really rancorous election season. There's a tremendous, tremendous anti-incumbency fever sweeping the nation. Together with that, we need to have another consciousness in the voters. America first, second, and third. We're going to vote out the old scoundrels. Let's be careful we don't vote new scoundrels in. If they're taking money from pro-Israel PACs, they are not to be seriously taken as a candidate for a leadership role in the United States of America. Like I said, if they think Israel is that great, move there. Run for the Knesset. If you love Israel that much, where you are willing to suborn and subvert your elected office in the United States to the will of Israel, you should be living in Israel. You should be taking care of Israel. I'm sure they'd love to have you. Go. I mean, they've paid your bills all these years. Go, live, have fun, enjoy. But right now, the United States of America needs leaders and politicians who are ready, willing, and able to deal with America's problems. We don't have that right now. We don't have leaders that will stand up to the Federal Reserve, men like John F. Kennedy or Abraham Lincoln or Andrew Jackson. We need leaders like that. We don't have it right now. We've got these manufactured public relations puppets that always talk a good shop about all the wonderful things they're going to do for us if we just push that little red button. And we push that little red button, and we wind up with the same disaster on our hands. Please stop watching the television news and their message about how things are going in the country, because Obama's going to stand on the TV and tell you everything's swell. And if you're losing your home and your business, it's your own fault
because you didn't pay your carbon taxes.
Look around you. Look at the vacancy rate at your local mall. Look at the unemployment lines. Look at all the empty foreclosed houses around you. Look at all the young people coming back home in those cheap metal boxes with those even cheaper American flags made in China draped over them. That's the state of the nation. Look at all the homeless people. The police are trying as hard as they can to keep them out of your sight so you don't see them. You may have to look for them. But once you find them and you look at them, you'll realize the condition of this country and this nation is in the condition it's in because our political leadership has sold its soul to a foreign government. And they're proud of it. This whole article in the Los Angeles Times are a bunch of prostitutes for Israel bragging about how good they are. I'd get into more details, but the FCC would yank our license. This article infuriates me. It should not even be an issue in the United States of America whether our candidates are supportive of a foreign government. That's not their job. It is not the job of the U.S. Congress to take care of Israel. That's Israel's government's job to do. Our government's job is to take care of this nation, and they're failing at it. They are failing at the job of taking care of this country. I want to tell you, it just angers me when I see these things. All right, I was talking about carbon taxes. I have been telling you ever since ClimateGate broke not to engage in excessive premature jubilation because there was so much money and political agenda invested in the global warming hoax that they were going to come back and they're going to keep on trying to sell this. And even as we have journal authors pulling their articles, even as we have Dr. Phil Jones doing a 180 and saying, you know, there really isn't any warming for the last 15 years of the hockey stick, even as all of this stuff is happening in the harshest winter since 1963. And I have been telling you, they're going to come back and try and sell you this lemon again. So we have this article. It's linked to the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. It says, world warming unhindered by cold spells. Scientists. Okay? And what this article is saying is that the fact that it's really cold hasn't affected global warming. I'm sure in their own imaginations it hasn't. And they're basically coming down here, we have satellite data that proves the world is still getting warmer. Okay? They're out there. You know, who are you going to believe? The pretty printed pieces of paper with the pretty lines on it and the hockey stick or your own lying eyes? We're going to pick this up on the next segment. I know we got a caller waiting on the line, but they're coming back at you. They really think they can fool you with this one. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
no matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
And aloha, America. Welcome back here. I'm utterly amazed. I'm looking at the media feeds, and they're actually reporting on this story that the son of the Hamas founder was a spy for Israel. And I'm rather amazed that they're doing that, because anybody going out on the net to get additional follow-up information on this is going to run across the story about how Israel created Hamas through Shin Bet. In order to prevent Yasser Arafat from uniting the Palestinian people into a single political movement to demand their independence here. I know why they're reporting it. It's all over the Internet today. We drive the news cycle now. Remember when the Downing Street Minutes came out? It was a whole month. It was the top story on the blogosphere. And finally, the corporate media had to report on it because everybody was saying, why aren't you guys covering this? So, yeah, we drive the news cycle now here. Except for the part about the Olympic curling and whatnot. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. John in Pennsylvania. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Aloha.
Aloha.
I just want to tell you that there's two major problems with the government.
Two? How lucky for you.
Well, no, there is many. We all know that. But, I'm a little nervous right now. I've never been on the radio.
Don't be nervous. Take a deep breath. I'm just having fun with you, and we're all friends here. So take a deep breath. All right, we've got two problems with government. What is problem number one?
Well, the first problem is that there's a major problem, really, that the problem with the government. Well, there's major problems. There's many problems. We all know that.
Pick one.
And the first problem is that there's many problems. I guess you could say that, right?
Okay, John. Is there a point that we're trying to get to here?
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to say that there's problems with our government, and
we know that. Okay, John, and, I'm gonna let you go because I don't think you have your
idea. The problem is that there's sorry, just a little nervous.
Okay, John, I'll tell you what. We're to the end of the show, and I got to get back to this global warming thing. I'm gonna let you go here. But think about what you want to say and call in tomorrow, okay? And I'm sorry to blow you off, but we are running out of time, and I really need to get back to this story here. All right, here's what's going on. They're going to come back with this global warming nonsense. Just today, there's another story that came out here today. I mean, the whole thing is really falling apart. To anybody who goes out and does their own research, we've got 700 international climate scientists are saying, no, there's nothing to global warming. The science is not settled. The science has gone completely awry. We have caught them in a total, complete fraud. Even Al Gore is avoiding the media spotlight right now. But amazingly enough, Ban Ki-moon at the United Nations came out today and said, please reject the skeptics' attempts to derail a global climate deal. Because back when I was telling everybody that this is all about a global carbon tax and redistribution of wealth and a global government, and people were writing in and saying that I jumped the shark, oh, come on, that's really silly. And yet here we are with the harshest winter since 1963. Another massive snowstorm is pounding the Northeast. We've got outright fraud in the computer codes. We've got suppression of the opposing points of view in the ClimateGate scandal. Phil Jones has done an about-face and admitted there is no warming. The hockey stick is a complete fantasy. We've got journal articles on which the whole IPCC illusion was based are being withdrawn by their authors, saying they really can't support the conclusions that they were paid to come up with. We've got the head of Greenpeace on a videotape admitting they just completely made up that nonsense about Greenland losing its ice sheet in just 20 years. We've got the thing with the Himalayas. It was just a guy making an off-the-cuff remark, and it became chapter and verse for the IPCC. And on and on and on, and still the United Nations is trying to force through this agenda. Because this is not about science, and it is not about the environment, and it's not about the planet Earth. It is about a grab for your money and a grab for more control over your lives. That is the failing of every government institution. They have to justify their continued governance of you by governing more and taking more. Governments, unfortunately, like somebody once said, it's like fire. It's a powerful servant and a fearful master. Governments become like cancers. Once they start growing beyond their bounds, they have to keep growing, and they have to keep justifying themselves by governing more and more of your life. We know the United Nations has been pushing a global government agenda for 30 years at least. And one of the three pillars that they're trying to found the global government on is human-caused global warming. And they're not going to let a little thing like the planet actually getting cooler get in their way. So Ban Ki-moon has signed on to Al Gore's Kool-Aid that the Earth is in the grip of man-bear-pig, and it's all your fault, and you've got to pay for it. And they're going to keep pushing this stuff, and they're going to keep trying to sell this. Now, this thing about the globe is getting warmer, even though it seems to be getting colder, is coming out of the World Meteorological Organization. They're being cited as the authority in all of these recent stories saying that, really, it's global warming that is creating the cold weather. But the World Meteorological Organization is another department of the United Nations. It's just another group they've put together to have the stamp of authority and go out to the media and say, oh, yes, freedom is slavery, war is peace, ignorance is strength, and freezing is global warming. And the reason I'm going to continue to pound on this as hard as I can is twofold. One, I reject the idea of global government for reasons I've already stated and don't have time enough to go into here. And second, I reject any government that comes into existence by fraud and deception. Because by definition, that is a government that can never allow freedom of speech or freedom of expression of ideas or freedom of inquiry. They will never dare allow it. Right from the start, they must be a tyranny and dictatorship. So I'm going to keep pounding on this because they're pushing for global government. They're pushing for carbon taxes. It's all about money. Al Gore, prior to ClimateGate, Al Gore was on his way to being the world's first carbon billionaire. He was going to become a billionaire out of absolutely nothing, just pretty printed pieces of paper, the carbon credit. Ken Lay helped him set the scam up. Al Gore was going to become a billionaire doing to planet Earth with carbon dioxide what Ken Lay did to California with electricity. So the bottom line here is, there's a lot of money on the line. They've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in setting up all these phony front groups and these so-called authority organizations about climate. They have handed out millions of dollars of funding to organizations like Hadley CRU or Penn State. And these organizations understand that funding will stop the instant the hoax of global warming is exposed. So they're out there. They're trying to save their own professional reputations. And if you want a model, look back and study the academic writings at the time Galileo was coming out and saying, you know, the sun is really the center of the solar system. Because there was an entire academic institution that was studying epicycles. And rather than say, oh, we were wrong, we're out of work, they attacked Galileo. That was part of the pressure that got him tortured. And we're seeing the same thing again today. The scientists got paid to come to a conclusion. The conclusion is wrong. They don't want to admit that they were wrong. They don't want to admit they were used. So they're going to fight this thing tooth and nail. But above that, and the issue that you need to understand that is really behind why we're seeing so many of the what used to be called respected media institutions of the United States continue to push this, like National Geographic. Although I wouldn't give National Geographic was out there with global warming, but then this last week, let's see, they've been doing crop circles, the real Roswell, UFO this, and snake monster that. National Geographic has blown its own credibility as far as I'm concerned. But the bottom line here is when the world wakes up and realizes the true scale of the hoax of human-caused global warming, they're going to understand once and for all that, yes, as a matter of fact, huge, vast conspiracies to defraud the people of the nation, to defraud the people of the world, to trick us into actions we would otherwise not agree to, are an absolute reality. Every time you talk about the conspiracy of 9/11 or John F. Kennedy or whatever, the first argument you get back from the government's paid defenders is, oh, a conspiracy that large could never possibly exist. Wrong. We got one. And it's staked out on the ground for everybody to look at and study and learn from. And it's called Climate Gate. This is a fight for truth. It's a fight for freedom. Right now, at least for the moment, we're winning. But we can't afford to be complacent. All right, that's it for our show. End of our Thursday show. My goodness, this week has gone by so fast. We're going to be back tomorrow night talking about all talking about whatever happens between now and then. So until tomorrow, stay safe, stay well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, and aloha, America.